Hey, good.
So let me introduce myself. My name is Denis Magda. I'm a product manager at GridGain, and I'm a chair of Apache Ignite project management committee. So I joined GridGain in 2015, and around the same year I became a committer of Apache Ignite project. And even today, even nowadays, I still keep committing to that project periodically. So all this means that I would encourage you to ask all the tricky technical questions you might have in your mind, and I will make sure to address them. So, and today we are going to review one of the use cases. We are not going to spend a lot of the time exploring Apache Ignite or Apache Spark. I want to show you how you can build a software stack relying on the projects and products built by Apache Software Foundation. And specifically, we will be talking about the software stack needed for an IoT-based solution. So this is how our agenda looks like for today. So as many other solutions, I prefer to start with the demands or requirements that are coming from a specific space, let it be financial institutions, telecommunications, or IoT. So we will just review some of the most important demands our architecture, our software stack has to follow. And next we will jump to the review of our IoT software stack. We will take a look at different layers that will be proposed by me. So we will take a look at operating system or real-time operating systems that needs to be used at the level of your edge devices or wearables or the smart meters. Then we will take a look at the so-called data collection or enrichment layer. So the layers that basically connected to your devices and receives all the information, all the samples, measurements from their side. And finally, once all this data is transmitted, aggregated, and collected, you need to store the data somewhere. And my proposal would be to use a hybrid transactional and analytical platform as your main storage and computational platform. Because, as you know, now many IoT projects, usually they start with kind of with not that big kind of number of sensors, deployed meters or wearables, but then your kind of solution can grow. And in return, your software stack should grow as well so that you can comply and satisfy all the requirements in relation to the performance, in relation to the throughput, and so on and so forth. And at the end, as usual, I'll show you a demo that will demonstrate how we can wire up some of the layers that we're going to discuss over here, and how actually you can start streaming your data from your sensors, aggregate them using Spark, and to also store all the data in your HTAP platform. And later on, you will see how you can use, what sort of APIs you can use to talk to your data that will be located in your distributed storage. Well, let's start with the demands to our software stack. So I would like to start with an example. Let's imagine that we sit in a self-driving car, probably produced by Google, Tesla Motors, or other company in the future. As you might guess, the car is equipped with tons of different sensors. And the goal of these sensors is to gather a variety of different information and to transmit all this information in real time to your software system that has to react on all the upcoming information in real time as well. If there is a significant delay somewhere in this flow from your sensors to operating system to your software system, then it can lead to a car accident or to other bad things. And actually, this is why real-time data injection and real-time data processing is so important for, I think, for a variety of different IoT-based solutions, applications, and services. Next, if the data that is gathered by your, let's say, devices like sensors has a specific point in time, and more, and even more, if your specific measurement is defined by some timestamp, then you start dealing with so-called time series data, the data that is uniquely defined by some timestamp in the past. And our software stack should be able not just, not only, you know, to store this data in the most efficient way, but also has to provide some API that can be used to extract some useful information from this time series data. If to talk a bit more about the APIs, IoT applications and solutions, they still need this old good SQL language support, which means that it will be beneficial for our platform, for our overall software stack, to, you know, to have SQL capabilities. Next, sometimes it's needed to have full text search capabilities. And finally, for instance, if let's say your devices, your edge devices, are location aware, meaning that they send different information that contains latitude and longitude, some location, then also it's good to have some geospatial support at the part of your platform. And finally, if you, I don't know, it also happens, but if you're dealing with, you know, voice recognition or machine vision or other kind of complex systems, then you might need to use some machine learning algorithms. And it would be good to have this as a part of our, you know, portfolio of our software stack. As for the scalability, as I said at the beginning, sometimes you can start, let's say, with dozens or hundreds of sensors deployed or wearables used by your customers. But then if your company, if your solution is successful, you will be kind of scaling out. And it will be great to, you know, to support kind of scalability at the heart of your software stack from the very beginning, so that you can scale out or scale up easily. And what's more important is lower cost. And as for the high availability, so this principle, this is kind of one of the main principles, this is one of the main requirements that belongs and has attitude not only to IoT, but to other many different spaces and markets. Simply it means that no matter what happens to your system, your applications and all your system must be up and running all the time, producing a correct and valid result set, unless all your data centers go down. Okay, that's what's about the demands. And now let's take a look at possible IoT software stack. So I decided to simplify it. So I'm not going to talk about specific protocols like MQTT that sometimes used in between device layer and data collection layer. Here is, we are going to give a general overview of this, all the layers you see. So starting from the bottom. So when, if you are a kind of an embedded engineer, if you are a software developer who works with all this hardware, you also need to have some operating system. The times when you need to deal with bare metal are coming to the past. And now in the market you can see a variety of different operating systems created for all this tiny hardware applications. For instance, you can use Linux, embedded Linux, if you have powerful enough hardware that has at least around 100 megabytes of RAM and 100 megabytes of flash. But if what if you're dealing with microcontrollers? Microcontrollers usually are considered to be constrained devices, meaning that they usually have around kilobytes of RAM, if you're lucky enough, and probably a couple of megabytes of flash. And Linux for sure can be run on those types of devices. And here is when different real-time operating system comes appears. like embedded operating system, like Apache Minute, like FreeRTOS, and many others. Next, once you decided with, you make a decision around an operating system for your edge devices, you need to find a way how to collect all this information from your IoT deployment. And sometimes it makes sense to dedicate a special data collection layer. So here is we would have some special frameworks or libraries that somehow receive all the information from your devices. And optionally, after the data arrives to this layer, framework or application can aggregate the data, transform the data, enrich it, and send it to the next layer, which stays above, which would be your hybrid transactional and analytical platform. Why don't we, why I don't suggest here to use, let's say, a conventional relational database or probably a data grid? Because we want to, first, we want to be sure that our platform can scale out. So if we need to scale, we want to pay as less money as possible. Kind of, it's better, you know, to buy some commodity hardware and make your cluster of machines more powerful. Also, why, for instance, not a data grid? Why not a key value storage? Because sometimes you need to do some advanced analytics, or you need to do some operational, you need to execute transactional workloads, and data grids sometimes they don't support all this as a part of a single platform. And actually, it would be great to have some platforms that combine both analytical and transactional workloads. And finally, is for the APIs, the Topaz layer, it's precisely defined by the HTAP platform you decide to use. So it depends on you. If you need, for instance, geospatial support, then make sure that that HTAP platform has it at the part of its API. If you need machine learning libraries, then also it might be kind of a decision maker for your choice. So in general, nowadays there can be a variety of different technologies and software stacks and software products that can be used for every layer shown on this picture. But today we are attending a conference organized by Apache Software Foundation, and I would demonstrate you a software stack that is fully based on the products and projects developed in-house by Apache Software Foundation communities. So as for the operating system, real-time operating system, if you deal with microcontrollers, then Apache Minute is truly a good choice for you. So it's available also, as many other projects, is available under Apache license. It's available for free. And in a couple of minutes, we will take a look at the main capabilities of this operating system. Next, for the data collection layer, here is you have many, many options. Like you can use Kafka, you can use Flink, you can use Apache Spark, or you can combine all these projects depending on your needs and depending on your situation. And finally, however, as for the HTAP layer, here is kind of, that's my personal opinion. Here is you can use Apache Ignite if you truly want to have kind of HTAP capabilities, if you want to support both transactional OLTP and OLOP workloads as a part of a single platform. And if you use, let's say, Apache Ignite as your HTAP platform, you can benefit from a variety of different APIs supported by Ignite, and also you can keep working with Apache Spark, because Apache Ignite integrates with Apache Spark. And later on, I will just briefly give you kind of a brief overview of the main features that might be useful for you and that have some relation to the IoT use case we are discovering today. Okay, now let's start with every component we see on this slide. And as for the data collection, we are going to review Apache Spark. So, but again, it's up to your use case. You can use whatever you like. I just decided to go for this Apache Spark. Okay, device operating system or real-time operating system. Well, let's imagine that we decide to design some new cool wearables, like new cool smartwatches. And here is you need to order some hardware. And most likely, if you're trying to build out any new cool smartwatches, then you will not be able to install a Linux operating system on such a constrained hardware. And this is where you can try give a try to Apache Manute. Apache Manute is one of the it's the only one operating system, a real-time operating system that belongs to Apache Software Foundation. And basically, its capabilities are the following: you can run it on the hardware powered by Cortex-M family, developed by ARM Corporation. Or, for instance, if you prefer to use other CPUs, you can run Apache Manute on MIPS or RISC-V processors. For sure, that operating system provides a variety of different APIs needed for you as a developer to interact with your peripherals and different actuators, like sensors and so on and so forth, connected to your hardware. But what's important for our scenario, that operating system, not only Apache Manute, but any operating system, must provide some solid and flexible networking component. Because depending on what is supported at the networking layer, it will result how you transmit your data, how quickly you can transmit your data to the data collection layer. And as for the Apache Manute, so presently, kind of 2 weeks ago at least, probably something has changed since that time. That community already supported Bluetooth Low Energy Protocol as a physical layer protocol. Next, also you can connect your Apache Manute devices to over the Wi-Fi. And as for the networking layer protocols, you can rely on all these well-known and widely used TCP/IP and UDP networking layer protocols. Finally, as for the software installment and upgrades, it's not just important, it's critical to have some systems that can upgrade your software, your hardware remotely. Because no one is going to go to a field, to a factory, gather all the sensors you have, and you know, and update them manually, one by one, in an office. You want to do this remotely, connecting. And Apache Manute designed in such a way, then you can connect to this operating system and upgrade your software that is running on your sensors, on your wearables. Well, that's Apache Manute. So let's imagine that we decided to use that operating system for our new fancy cool device. Next, once we develop all the application, kind of application for our new device, we want to transmit all the data to the next layer, which is called data collection and enrichment layer. And here is kind of my personal preference is to use Apache Spark, and specifically Apache Spark Streaming framework, which is built on top of Spark core functionality. Actually, it works in such a way that if you take a look at this picture, you can start up a cluster of your Spark workers that will receive information from different sources, like the one listed on this slide. Or also, it can be connected with your devices over some networking protocol, and all these devices can pull the data, or Spark can pull the data if it's needed. And once Spark receives all the data, for instance, from our devices, we can aggregate, we can transform this data, we can do some initial calculations, and right after that, we need to store this data somewhere in our HTAP platform, so that all your other applications can connect to your platform and do some useful work with all the data that arrives from your devices. And here is we decided to use Apache Ignite. Okay, and now let me briefly talk about, not briefly, just spend 10 minutes or so talking about Apache Ignite. So actually, why we can kind of say that Apache Ignite is suitable for the IoT space in general? And let me start with the one of the use cases. I hope that you know one of the company called Silver Spring Networks. This is one of the vendors that develops and different IoT-based solutions, applications, and services. And for one of the platform, Silver Spring implemented the following. Silver Spring deployed more than 50 million sensors worldwide. All the sensors sent data back to the Silver Spring network. Later on, the data is analyzed by the platform in order to control optimal power coverage and usage across all this kind of diverse location. And as you might guess, at the heart of this platform, Silver Spring Network uses Apache Ignite as their kind of storage and computational platform. And now let's take a look at a bit more on Apache Ignite from technical perspective. So Apache Ignite started as a product named in-memory data fabric. So we called it in-memory data fabric because in reality it's a combination of different well-integrated components. But at the same time, depending on what set of components you use, you can treat it as a data grid if you just want to use our data grid capabilities. Or if you decided to use SQL grid, then Apache Ignite can be used as full-fledged distributed SQL database. Or for instance, if you need to execute kind of transactional and operational workloads over the same data set stored in Apache Ignite cluster, then you will deal with Ignite as with HTAP platform. And if to talk about the main components, there are two main components that you use all the time, it doesn't matter what would be your use case. So the first one is kind of clustering component. It's needed, you know, to interconnect all your physical machines or your cloud machines in a single cluster. It's pretty easy and straightforward to use it. You just need to say every node how they can auto-discover each other, and that's it. And once you have your cluster, you need to push all the data there. And here is when you need to use the data grid that we are going to review a bit later. The data grid, okay, let's review it right now. The data grid at the implementation layer, it's a key value storage. So it's a kind of a hash table, kind of like, or concurrent hash map that we accustomed to use in Java, .NET, or C++. With the only difference is that this kind of hash table is distributed. And this is if you need only key value operations, then you are good to go with these capabilities. All the data will be distributed for you across all the machines you have. If you want to have fault tolerance and high availability guarantees, then you just need to set a number of replicas, a number of copies of your data to the value bigger than zero, and that's it. And then Apache Ignite will automatically handle all the possible failure situations. And finally, if you need to execute transactions, then you can use distributed transactions implemented in Apache Ignite. So the transactional subsystem is SID compliant. So specifically, you can use optimistic, pessimistic transactions. You can use all this serialization, all the isolation levels like serializable, repeatable read or read committing, depending on your use case. And this transactional subsystem is based on the implementation of two-phase commit protocol. So if you're interested in this, you can read a bit more about this later. And now let's imagine that we decided. So we already designed our device. We installed Apache Manute there. We also created a cluster of Apache Spark workers, so all the data goes from the devices to Spark. And finally, it needs to be sent to this data grid, to your cluster of machines. And how Spark can do this? Spark can use special streaming capabilities, streaming APIs, available in Apache Ignite. So what it needs to do, Apache Spark, special integration created for Apache Spark, it will create so-called Ignite Data Streamer, special object that connects to the cluster and streams the data in real time in the fastest way possible in Apache Ignite. As for the stream receivers, they are needed only if you want to execute some custom logic at the time when your data comes to a specific node. That's optional, but sometimes it's a kind of a requirement. And as for the stream adapter is a kind of a source of data. Data can be streamed into the cluster from sockets, Kafka, Flink, and in our scenario, the data, aggregated, transformed data, will be streamed from Apache Spark cluster. Well, and finally, now we are receiving, let's suppose that we are receiving all these endless streams of measurements, samples from Spark, and we need to write some applications that want to analyze this data, that needs to make some decisions, react on different events that are coming to the cluster, or probably you just need to do some, you need to develop some applications that need to execute some logic offline, meaning that it's not to be done in real time. And as for the APIs, I just prepared a set of APIs that are somehow related to the IoT solutions and that are used by Silver Spring Networks and other companies that rely on Apache Ignite. So first one is Apache Ignite SQL Grid component. So in reality, it's a kind of distributed SQL engine. So it's built on top of Compute Grid and Data Grid. So it's built on this distributed hash table, distributed key value storage. The only difference the cool thing about this Data Grid is that it's ANSI 99 compliant. So Apache Ignite community didn't reinvent the wheel. So we didn't create our own cool, a custom language for querying capabilities. We just decided to support everything that is defined by that specification. For instance, you can execute all sort of possible aggregations. You can join your data. You can sort your data, group your data, everything you need. And sometimes, not even sometimes, there is, it's quite common even when you decide to migrate from a relational database, you need to do just minor modifications sometime, or you don't need to do any modifications in your existing SQL queries if you plan to switch to Apache Ignite. This is the power of an SQL engine if it satisfies to some standard specification. And also this SQL grid support allows you to support for geospatial data and full text search. And as for the joins, it's worth to mention that you can join all sort of data. There are no any limitations. So all your data can be located in different machines, on different cluster machines. And depending on how you store your data, you can execute any sort of join every time, but whether it will be executed in the fastest way or a bit slower depends on how you store your data. If you collocate your data, meaning that if you have cities and countries, caches in your cluster, and if you collocate all the cities with the respective countries, then you can join data stored in cities and countries in the fastest way. So Ignite internally figures out what sort of execution flow has to be used when you join your data. And as for the consistency and fault tolerance guarantees, they are strictly followed all the time. So which means that if you issued your SQL query, and during the time the state of your cluster is being changed, meaning that you just one of the nodes left the cluster. It doesn't mean that your application will either receive an exception or will get an incorrect result set. Apache Ignite SQL Grid engine internally will detect the situation and will reissue part of the query to the nodes that still have required data set. And finally, if you take a look at this picture, in your cluster, once you enable this SQL Grid framework, all the nodes will store not only data, they will also maintain indexes if you define them. So the queries are indexable, and we don't want to, you know, to waste resources of our cluster scanning through all the data we have. We want to rely on indexing capabilities. And as for the connection, you can connect and execute all these queries using Java, .NET, or C++ APIs, or you can rely on GDBC and ODBC drivers supported for Apache Ignite. And this capability gives you a way to connect to the cluster, let's say, from languages like PHP, Ruby, and many others, or from your favorite tool like Apache Zeppelin, like Tableau, or whatever you have. Next, this is the SQL capabilities. Next, sometimes, and for instance, Silver Spring networks, they use Compute Grid. Actually, Compute Grid is an implementation of a MapReduce framework deliberately created for Apache Ignite. And in short, so it has many other the same capabilities as many other MapReduce frameworks, but my best one is this zero deployment. So let me explain what it means to you. Zero deployment means that, let's say that this is our application where you develop and created some custom MapReduce task. And now when you decide to send this computation for the execution to your cluster, you don't need to put a class file of this computation to your cluster nodes. You don't need to add it to the class path of your cluster nodes. When this computation is sent, let's say, to this cluster node, and if this cluster node doesn't find the class in its local class path, it will connect internally to this sender and will preload the bytecode needed for this computation over the wire. It will deserialize your computation after that and execute it locally. And when this computation is no longer needed, for instance, when this application is disconnected from your cluster, the cluster nodes will unload all these classes so that you don't face any memory leaks related to the class loaders. Well, for the Spark users, right? So we already mentioned that Ignite and Spark are integrated, and this is that specific integration. So Apache Ignite community, so in Spark we have two ways how we can deal, at least two ways how we can deal with the data. Like the first one is RDD based, and the second one is data frames based. And for the RDD, Apache Ignite implemented this RDD concept, releasing so-called shared RDDs. So which means that now you can use shared Apache Ignite shared RDD as one more way to talk to your data stored in your Apache Ignite cluster. That shared RDD implements all the interface methods defined by Spark framework. And in addition, if it gives you a way to execute Ignite's SQL queries over this shared RDD interface. Ignite's SQL queries, why to use Ignite's SQL queries? The answer is simple, because you can, in Ignite, you can index your data. In Spark, as far as I know, there is no way to index your data, which means that if you issue some SQL queries from Spark, using Spark SQL queries, then you will face all these full scans over the data sets you have. In Ignite, it's not it's not that. It works a different way. So you will get kind of algorithmic execution time for all the queries you issue. And finally, the final slide I have is that if somehow you need to execute some complex calculations related to machine learning, predictive analysis, for instance, if you want to predict what might happen to your sensors deployed in a field, relying on the data sets you have for this week and for this day, then you might need to have some machine learning algorithms. So machine learning grid, it's kind of the newest component we have in Apache Ignite portfolio. And actually it was, now it's released in the beta state. What we did in Apache Ignite 2.0, it was released a month ago. What we did in the first version, we implemented so-called distributed core algebra. So now you can work with all these dense and sparse matrices. You can do matrices and vectors-based calculations. And actually, if you're a researcher or a scientist, you right now you can use these applications to build out your own custom machine learning algorithms needed for your solution. But at the same time, presently the community, a part of the community is working on some of the well-known algorithms like linear or logistic regressions, like k-means, clustering, decision trees, and all these algorithms will be released and available for the usage in the nearest month, two or so. They will be released one by one. So that's all for the theoretical part, and now let's take a look at the demo. So here is So I created a simple demo. So what we have here? This class actually used to start, an Apache Ignite cluster node. I will start my cluster locally on my local laptop. So in reality, you as a developer, when you work with Apache Ignite, you don't need to, to talk to your IT department asking, to provide some hardware where you can deploy your cluster. You can do all this stuff locally. And even more, Apache Ignite community, we have tons of different tests, unit tests. And all these tests are executed on local machines, which means that you can even start Apache Ignite cluster in a single GVM. In a single GVM process. So this is something that we widely use in our unit test. Well, and here is, if you take a look at this string, here is we trying to start our Apache Ignite cluster node, and we will be using this configuration, so this XML configuration. If you take a look at this configuration, don't be scared enough, here is just I defined some of the caches that will store the data, and this is how I define SQL schema for these caches. We omitted this, but in reality, you can define SQL schema in Apache Ignite using data definition language. All this, create table, create index, or drop index statements. Or you can use annotations. Or this is kind of the third way. People tend not to use it. I just like this way, and this is kind of my personal preference. Okay, so let's start this node. I want to have a couple of them in my cluster. Okay, the first one node is up and running, and the second one is connected. So now we have a cluster of two Apache Ignite nodes running locally on my laptop. And next, let's start kind of Spark application, so for our data collection layer. So today I didn't bring any physical hardware, so I will emulate a data generation. So I created a special sensor data generator class that actually listens on this local port, and once Spark connects to this port, this application will send random data to the Spark. Spark will receive this data, aggregate it, and send back to my Apache Ignite cluster. Okay, and now let's start with Spark. Let's go back to Spark. So here is everything is simple. I will have two Spark workers locally. I'm creating Spark context. And here is I'm defining Ignite context for Spark. So Spark will connect to Ignite using this Java Ignite context. And specifically on the Apache Ignite side, we will have two different distributed caches deployed, two different distributed data sets available. The first one will store different sensors that deployed somewhere. And also the second one will store all the measurements related to the sensors. So, and actually what we do next, Apache Spark will preload the first cache, sensor cache, with some random data. We will be generate all these latitudes and longitudes randomly, giving sensors some unique name. And finally, what's more interesting, once this happens, we will Spark streaming component. We'll try to connect to our data generator application. And then all this application will be received in the form of streams. Spark will split this data. Then we will do some additional transformations. And finally, all the data will be sent to Apache Ignite cluster. This is how it works. This is how we define this a chain of different transformations and executions in Apache Spark. And the final one is we need to push it to Ignite. Next, and also I'm trying to schedule special timer on Apache Spark side. And this timer will execute this SQL query once in 4 seconds. And here is we're using SQL query, Apache Ignite SQL engine. So what we will do, this SQL query will return total number of measurements reported by every sensor if kind of in temperature is in this range between 70 and 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Okay, well, now, and finally, so now we have our cluster running, and also we can connect to our cluster from this Apache Ignite management and monitoring tool. I need to start a special application called Ignite Web Agent that connects this web tool and your cluster. It's kind of mediator between your web console and your cluster. It's pretty simple to start it. Okay. Well, okay, here is we have two local nodes that are running on my laptop. There are, where are my caches? No, okay, here is my caches that are deployed, but they are empty, no data. I don't have any data there. And now let's start our Spark application. Now, as we know, Spark application will fill out sensors cache with some exemplary sensors. And after all, we will be streaming temperature measurements from our data generator indefinitely. Okay, Spark context is up and running, and now Spark is trying to connect to Apache Ignite. It will be connected as usual basic Ignite application. Okay, so now we preloaded. Now we can see, let me see, there should be more non-zero value for sensor cache. Why don't you show this? Let me try to refresh. Looks like the connection, Wi-Fi connection is poor. Yeah, it takes time. The connection is poor. Okay, while it's trying to refresh, what's going on? Wi-Fi? Okay, while trying to refresh, this exception you see is fine because we haven't started our data generator yet. So Spark constantly tries to connect to our kind of, let's say, to our sensors deployed somewhere. and there is no any data. And now we need just to start this sensor generator class. Why can't you connect? Okay, we could connect. Here you have Spark. Okay, now we see, so Spark could connect to this data generator. So this is how we try to emulate our devices deployed somehow. And this is the query that is being executed by Spark periodically. The data is being received endlessly. So because if you take a look at this source code of this data generator, it sends the data infinitely once in kind of in 100 milliseconds. However, we will not face kind of overflow of our cache, because I specifically, for the sake of the demo, I set up special data eviction policies, meaning that every entry that is pushed into the cluster will be there for no more than 10 seconds. And this is why we see that total number of entries is kept around 400, because the rest of the entries are evicted automatically by Apache Ignite. Okay, and finally, just to wrap it up, this discussion is querying capabilities. If you need SQL queries, for instance, you can write your SQL queries from your application, or you can give a try to your queries from this management and monitoring tool. Come on, boy, connect to the internet. Oh, it doesn't want to connect to the internet. One more try. Okay, let me try to switch it to my personal hotspot. Probably it will help. Okay, we did it. And here is kind of the simplest use case we have, the simplest query. We want to see the maximum temperature. No, it still takes time. Let me try to... Where is my hotspot? No, unfortunately, I can't. It worked nice before. This way. Okay, I connected to my... Yeah, let me try to connect via my hotspot.
No. So no data comes in, and you can actually work with it quite fast. This is cool, but I mean, data comes in and comes in and comes in.
Uh-huh.
Is there any kind of mechanism to, in a way, time out the data that is held in memory, or some way to, in a way, offload memory to disk? I mean, otherwise, memory will be full.
So here is, as you see, I harness all these eviction capabilities, so the data is completely removed from memory. But you can have a persistent storage. So you can use any storage you like a relational database, I don't know, NoSQL database, like MongoDB or Cassandra, is a persistent storage. And so once you put your data into the memory, it will be stored on the disk as well, and then when it will be evicted in the memory, but it will not be removed from your disk.
Okay.
So yeah, looks like, guys, I'm an unlucky one. I can't connect via the internet. Let me give one more try. Okay, we did it. So here's the simplest query. So now we want just to get the maximum temperature that reported by all the sensors we have. And for instance, I want to execute the same query every 5 seconds. It might vary because the data is being constantly changed. And here is another interesting query that joins the data. It joins the data stored in different caches across different machines. And here is, I want to get the maximum temperature reported by every individual sensor, and the sensors must be located in the United States. So these are the boundaries of the United States. And here is what we have. We also can set up this refresh rate, And so here we see that this we have only four sensors, or kind of five sensors deployed in the United States, and they show this temperature. Okay, that's all from my side. If you have any questions, I will be happy to answer them.
I have a question.
Uh-huh.
So for a little sensor data like temperature, humidity, stuff like that, it seems like a really, a very useful thing.
Uh-huh.
For the car, though, there's things like video streams and LiDAR streams where uh-huh. it's like megabytes of data.
Uh-huh.
Is there any tool, this Apache, some other Apache tool that can really help handle that?
So I see that. So you just need to avoid a bottleneck, right, in your software stack, which means that you need to have, for instance, if to rely on this architecture, proposed architecture, you need to have a cluster of Spark workers, kind of cluster of several machines that will get in parallel data coming from your devices, like megabytes and gigabytes. And the same has to be done for your Apache Ignite cluster. You also need to have as many machines in your cluster as you need, because then all the workloads, then all the data will be streamed across all the machines you have. There will not be any kind of, a single point bottleneck. And also, if to talk about transmission layer, before my talk, there was my colleague from Pivotal, and he explained how you can use, for instance, MQTT protocol if you want to transmit data from devices to, to Ignite or to Geode or to whatever else, to Spark, because it's also kind of, there are special frameworks that allows to distribute all this stuff.
So in your stack, what are your thoughts about a layer sort of essentially between the lowest device and the collection that had more intelligence, that was doing more analytics closer to the edge?
Uh-huh.
And is that something that you see?
If that might happen, you can do some sort of analytics at Apache Spark level. Why not? Because it shouldn't be just, a silly receiver of your data, right? You can receive the data, and if you have some critical path, like some event is got from your devices and you need to react at it immediately, then Spark can take care of it. So you can see that something bad happens to your devices, and Spark can do this, for instance.
So I think what I was kind of asking for is something either like some of these simple devices which are just streaming simple data sets uh-huh. values, either they go in like an IoT gateway that might do uh-huh. additional analytics, uh-huh. Sort of to reduce either the amount of data that's going up.
I see. Probably then something, but kind of, I used to work for Oracle before I just joined GridGain, and I was a part of the team that developed Java for IoT devices. And in that part, usually all this calculation, we support that the calculation would happen on all these gateways. So because in gateway you can install Linux, and if you have Linux, you can write some advanced applications. But presently, I don't have any personal suggestion what you can use on those gateways. But if you have Linux, then you should have some options.
So I'll put a plug-in for Apache Engine then. That's actually sort of trying to uh-huh. provide a framework for people to fit something. So in between that
uh-huh, correct.
Layer,
yeah, correct,
layer
correct. Yeah, correct. This is why I just, from the very beginning, I mentioned this is kind of a simple architecture, right? Kind of big blocks. But in reality, if you take a look, there will be a breakdown on small different pieces, like you're saying. Yeah, I agree with you. Okay, any other questions?
With the last part about Apache Geode, you promised to
the difference? Yeah, so as for the difference, so the difference, like I said, there is something that is similar in both projects, because you can use both Apache Geode and Apache Ignite as your data grid if you just need to cache your data and use like continuous queries or basic key value operations, then both products work well for these scenarios. But next, if you want, for instance, if you need to have some advanced querying capabilities, like you want to have distributed SQL database, then Apache Ignite wins in this area because we have this our own SQL framework, which is distributed. Next, machine learning. And as for the computations, so we do support this kind of, if you want to use MapReduce things, we do support, as that mentioned, zero deployment thing, when you don't need to put your classes in the class path of your server nodes, everything will be preloaded. And probably something else. But SQL, machine learning, and kind of compute grid, this is something that different. Just use case by use case. Depends on the use case.
How big is the biggest Apache Ignite cluster you've been operating?
1,000 of nodes, 1,000 of server nodes, and thousands of client applications connected to it. It's used by one of the banks. It's called Sberbank. It's the largest bank in Russia and Eastern Europe.
And what you do is a little bit off topic, but with these Internet of Things devices, you might know that security is one of the primary concerns, right? So I was wondering, how would you protect if the receiving host is the host that should receive that data? Your device, for example, the devices are streaming in the opposite direction. For example, if you would like to update the firmware of the device, how you can verify that the guy that is sending the updates is the one that is authorized to do that?
Yes, so if you're talking about an opposite direction, like you need to connect to your devices, right? Then you need to rely on Apache Minute, capabilities. So Apache Minute, yeah, they have this kind of security bootloader that can be signed, and this is how you can guarantee that there is no any kind of a man in the middle that who tries to.
Usually, the network might be protected, but might not be.
Yeah, yeah. You can use usually. Yeah, usually all these real-time operating systems or Linux, they do support. They have this as a part of their main functionality. Okay. Okay. Good. Thanks.
Thank you.